And tonight on Coast to Coast, we're going to talk about some issues that truly affect us in a very strange way. Ilana Freeland on Coast to Coast back with us, and we will get right into it in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. It's been a couple of years since Ilana was on with us. She was on with my colleague Richard Serrett. Over the years, she has been a Waldorf school pioneer, a teacher, a lecturer, storyteller, and writer. She's written for alternative publications, edited the stories of survivors of MKUltra and ritual abuse. She has ghostwritten books on all kinds of diverse topics. A couple of her books include Chemtrails, Harp, and the Full Spectrum Dominance of Planet Earth, Under an Ionized Sky as well. And here she is back on Coast to Coast. Ilana, welcome back to the program. It's been a couple of years.
It's been exactly four, George. I'm really happy that you finally brought me on.
Too long.
Well, it took that long to write the book. The second book only came out a few months ago.
Were you born in Missouri?
I was, on a kitchen table on a farm.
Whereabouts?
Cora County, about 90 miles north of Columbia.
Yeah, well, I still go back to St. Louis quite often when my kids are still out there, and I moved out there in 78. I love it. It's a great state.
It's been a long time since I've been there.
You miss it?
No, not anymore. I'm a West Coast girl now.
Okay, well, super. But here on the West Coast, it's full of chemtrails, isn't it?
Well, it's full of chemtrails everywhere.
Yeah, it is. Tell me how you got interested in these subjects we're going to talk about tonight, Ilana.
Well, I started out, I was living in England, and I did some work for Adam Parfrey at Farrell House, did some editing for him. And then I came back to the States and returned where I went to grad school, to Santa Fe. And while I was there, I became friends with Clifford Carnicom, the independent scientist, who really was the very first one collecting data on the strange long trails throughout the very blue northern New Mexico sky. And we would have breakfast, he and his wife and some friends and I, and Clifford and I would end up talking about his latest research. So I got really involved in the early stages of his collecting data on the fibers that he found coming down from the sky. I mean, he knew that those were not contrails, condensation mm-hmm. trails. He could tell because the condensation trail only lasts about 30 seconds. These lasted a long time and then spread out into a cirrus cloud cover. So he knew that it was not normal, and he would scrape off whatever detritus he found in his HEPA filter, and he was collecting precipitation, looking at it under his microscope, and I became involved when I did the red wine test, which I don't know if you know what that is.
I do not.
But it's still on the net. You take red wine in your mouth and slosh it around for 5 minutes and then spit it into a clean glass jar. And what you will find are fibers. At first, you might
really
think that it's from your mouth, from gum tissue or something, but really...
Or stuck dental floss or something.
Right. But you'll see them move. And that's a very wakeful moment when you see that happen, that they are alive.
Oh, my gosh. You know, sometimes I have gone outside in the morning and I've seen what looks like spider webs all over the place.
Yes.
And they're not spider webs.
No, and that's another part of the what's coming down with the chemical trails. That's really polymers. And connected to the polymers are all sorts of either pathogens, biological pathogens, genetically engineered material, could be sensors, could be microprocessors. All sorts of things are connected to those when they come down. And really, people should know not to touch them with their skin. They should put on gloves.
You know, there was a time that people who thought the way you do, and we've covered on this show, that we're all conspiracy theorists. That's starting to go away, isn't it?
It sure is. I mean, that's a very tired CIA term from the 70s, I think, is when they made that term out of COINTELPRO. I've lived with that term most of my intellectual life. It means so little because power always conspires. We all know that. But this geoengineering, it really changed for me over time. I mean, when Adam Parfrey asked me to write a book on chemtrails, I already had a file on it, and I had a file on HARP, the High Frequency
Out in Alaska.
Active Auroral Research Project up in Gakona. And I had read Nick Begich and Gene Manning's book, Angels Don't Play This Harp, which was published in 95. And really, my life started to change from that time on because someone apparently saw me reading the book. This was before I met Clifford, and reported me, I assume, because I had a military helicopter over my house the following day.
Oh, boy.
And my phone began to click in strange patterns. I call it the paranoid 90s. That's the way life was back then if you were studying HARP. When I talked with Clifford and realized the biological aspect, I was very excited to write the book for Adam because I had studied biology as an undergrad and hadn't really done anything with it. So Clifford helped me do two really good chapters in that first book, Chemtrails, HARP, and the Full Spectrum Dominance of Planet Earth. Chapter two is a breakdown of Bernard Eastland's HARP patent from 1987, in which he admits that what they're going to need is they're going to need to have a lot of particulate matter in the atmosphere if they hope to be successful with the HARP experiments with the ionosphere. And that's a really important chapter. And then the last chapter was dedicated to, I read over 100 papers of Clifford Carnicum about Morgellons and his discovery of it and his dissection of it and what was in it and the genetics. And that would be in chapter 8 of that first book. But I thought I was done by then, and yet it was after that coast-to-coast interview with Richard that I received a call from Billy Hayes, known to many as the HARP Man. And Billy became very valuable to me because he had worked as a team leader on the HARP project when they put those phased array antennas up in Gakona, Alaska. And he'd also worked on 240 other projects of crawling up those towers and calibrating them, building them. And he's the one who directed me in the direction of the old SDI program, the Strategic Defense Initiative, that we all call Star Wars, that was begun in the Reagan presidency when George H.W. Bush was vice president and Dick Cheney was Secretary of Defense. And that program was supposedly the space fence. And that was a big part of it. And that space, the only space fence we had then that was a sort of a necklace of radar installations across the south and midwest part of the United States from coast to coast. And yet that project that was supposed to be the protection against ballistic missiles, et cetera, it sort of went underground, went black under Clinton when it had been renamed the Ballistic Missile Defense Program.
Why did it go underground?
Well, I maintain in both books that it went underground because they did not have the atmosphere they needed to be successful with an entire space fence program. And what they needed was what HARP was all about. And Bernard Eastland came along right at the end of the Reagan era, and then they built the HARP. They had other ionospheric heaters by then, but they didn't have nearly the power and the steering mechanism that Eastland's patent gave them with the ionospheric heater up in Gakona. So when they did the experiments, and basically what it entailed was steering and zapping a certain area of the ionosphere sort of burning into it with radio waves or microwaves, and activating all of the electrons up there, turning them into ions, so that then when they came down the magnetic lines of force or the Birkeland currents down into the Earth's atmosphere, because we're definitely connected with our ionosphere, then they were able to, in a way, turn our lower atmosphere into a mini ionosphere. And that's what they needed. They still, of course, use the ionospheric heaters to pump out energy whenever they need it from the ionosphere. It was to control the ionosphere and to impregnate, in a way, the our troposphere so that they could have masses of wireless operations for the military.
Ironically, Eastland died in 2007 in St. Louis, in Missouri.
Oh, did he? Yeah. Was it in St. Louis?
It sure was.
I mean, his death was kind of suspicious to me, but then I'm by nature suspicious of a lot of things.
Well, he was convinced that HARP technology was based on his technology, and of course, HARP folks denied it, but he took it to his dying day that he believed that they basically took his knowledge and built HARP.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, they did. I mean, all you have to read, he had several patents for HARP. But early on, I assume people know this, but maybe not, the CIA was involved in this whole project. And it was through their defense contractors, mostly Raytheon, and also the U.S. Navy and U.S. Air Force. By the way, I forgot to tell you, did you at all know when you decided to have me on tonight that this is Tesla's
birthday,
162nd
yeah.
birthday?
This is his birthday. We time everything, Ilana, perfectly.
You're something else, because this is all Tesla technology that I write about.
That's right.
Of course, he had a different dream, didn't he? He had a free energy dream.
Well, they weren't going to let him do that.
No, instead, they're militarizing and weaponizing everything.
Have you become bitter, sinister, or more Paul Revere-ish in what you're doing?
Have I become?
Yeah.
Well, the research I did previous to this, I'm an ex-60s political, not a radical like the Weathermen, but I was always political, and it's probably the greatest thing of my generation was not just sex, drugs, and rock and roll, but that we were highly political. And I had done a great deal, in fact, 10 years of research on every aspect of the underbelly of the American government to find out what happened to America since Kennedy's assassination. I'd done that for another series of books I wrote that was fiction-based, but was really, really a historical work on just how that underbelly dominated America. And because I'd done that, I'd already sort of honed my skills on reading disinfo, misinfo, et cetera, and being able to sort out the chaff from the wheat. I had a lot of practice in writing that series before I hit the Chemtrails and Space Fence book.
So what would you say HARP is being used for today? I mean, they've always said, well, we use it as a communication device. I think that's baloney. I mean, when we can now send a picture from one cell phone to another in another country instantly, you don't need HARP for a communication device. It's being used for something else. You think it's weather manipulation?
Well, just remember that when you say HARP, you're thinking of the one installation in Gakona, Alaska. But
they've got a couple though now.
Oh, we've got over 100 now.
Jeez.
Around the world, and many of them now they're all ionospheric heaters. I mean, for example, before HARP, we had one out on Long Island, at Brookhaven. We had one in Puerto Rico at Arecibo. There was the one, the ISCAT in Norway. Then the Russians had Sura. You know, they're everywhere, but they've gotten smaller, and mobile now, because they are a weapon system. And that's kind of why I wrote Under an Ionized Sky, was to show how the space fence is back in all its glory and is completely about a huge infrastructure, a ground infrastructure, operating in tandem with a near-Earth orbit structure. And we're kind of sandwiched in between, and certainly the air we're breathing is not the same air we were breathing 50 years ago because of how they need to keep the atmosphere ionized. I mean, you know, it's the weather. You talk about the weather. Yes, the weather, weather engineering. I'm always asked, is there any natural weather? And I say, no, not to my knowledge. It's all manipulated.
Is it for weaponization? Is that what they want to control?
Yes. I believe that they're, I don't know if you've been following the flooding going on in Europe, but I've been following each of the countries that are being serially flooded for the last several months, maybe 4 months. And all of them are in NATO, and they're all attempting to break free of U.S. domination. So this is a perfect way. It's an act of God, right? Weather is an act of God. So, you know, you can muscle nations, and you can make them pay for not having bent to your will. And I believe that's exactly what Fukushima was. But it was HAARP that was used there. I would say it was HAARP. That's what I describe it in Chemtrails HAARP in that book, and why I feel that that is true. So picture this. You've got ionosphere heaters. Yes, they are heating the ionosphere. That's one of their functions.
Right.
But they have multiple functions. And one of the functions is to operate as a scalar wave weapon. And all they need to do is have two or three of them from around different latitudes and longitudes and cross beams over the target area. And boom, you know, you can have an earthquake. You can have, you can build a tornado.
Could you take down a plane?
Oh, a plane's a piece of cake.
That's Tesla technology right there.
Yeah, absolutely. And 9/11, I mean, that's how I start out the second book, is with a preface dedicated to 9/11, because just as Dr. Judy Wood said, that was a directed energy weapon. She never says it was HAARP, of course, because she can't prove that and she wouldn't say that. But it was a directed energy weapon, and the whole thing was staged to be a manifestation, a demonstration of this incredible weapon that the United States now had.
Are you scared, Ilana, that you have gotten to this point where your conclusions are so frightening and so disruptive to what government is trying to do? Are you scared?
You mean like being targeted?
Yeah, watched, anything like that?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. You have to take that into consideration. I mean, I'm digging around in national security. That's in open source, though. I mean, I don't have any deep throat particularly. I have a couple of ex-NASA scientists who can advise me now and then when I get stuck technically, but I'm speaking to the people, and I consider myself, I don't have a PhD in plasma physics. I think that would probably be my death knell if I did. I'm instead a researcher and sort of a smart person with a bit of a science background, and so I can explain to people the big picture of how this technology is working, much like the Manhattan Project was going on in the 40s, and that's kind of why I feel I'm maybe a little safe. I actually think, George, that I'm telling people what's going on, and that I'm actually doing a favor.
All right, stay with us, Ilana. We're going to just hit a break, and we're going to come back and talk more about your work. Her latest book is called Under an Ionized Sky. Lots of people call this program Complaining About Morgellons Disease. We'll talk about that, too. And welcome back. Ilana Friedland's with us. We're going to take calls with her next hour. I've got more to talk with her about now. This affliction called Morgellons appears to be relatively new, Ilana. Do you believe that it has something to do with the fibers that are falling from the skies, because people complain of fibers coming out of their system? And you're claiming that these things are alive.
Yes, yes. They're genetically engineered. And when Clifford Carnicom was getting into their innards to figure them out and how they were set up, he renamed them the cross-domain bacteria. And he renamed them that because they actually have elements of all three kingdoms of nature in them, which is kind of how you know that these have been genetically engineered. They also are, I just wanted to say, I don't believe that they're from the fibers falling from the chemical trails. I know they are. Are they the only delivery system would be a question that's a good question. And that I don't know, because now we're finding out what vaccinations are being piggybacked with all sorts of stuff. And we're also taking another look at GMOs now that it's been purchased by Bayer. Monsanto has been purchased by Bayer. Is it a delivery system as well, is the way I look at it. Three delivery systems, one in the air, and then one in food, mm-hmm. and then the third one. So, you know, it's a challenge to be alive now, because you have to be a paranoid in order to stay alive.
No, that's true. And by the way, you mentioned food. I on this program, you can't turn around without having some kind of food recall or some situation where people have come down with salmonella or some other affliction. Just yesterday, I had a story about Del Monte's celeries and carrots and broccoli packages that they sell. People have been getting sick with that. We've had melons. It's bizarre.
Well, and it's a mass society. I mean, they're turning to an industrialized food source, and that way they can control what we eat. It's the same to me as all the other fascist control that's being set up, where they can control our energy use with smart meters, for example. And everything is sort of boxing us in. And what I try to show in Under an Ionized Sky is how all of this constitutes the infrastructure of a space fence lockdown on humanity and all of life, actually. I mean, because we have entered a space age, but the problem is to really launch out to the solar system. I won't even talk about beyond the solar system. They have to control the planet, and that's the full spectrum dominance doctrine of the military. They want to control it through the controlling the electromagnetic spectrum. I mean, it totally makes sense when you're in an electromagnetic era, as we are. It's just that most citizens don't take science beyond high school. And even then, they hated it. So now we're living in a technological era, and we have this Morgellons entity, which is partially organic, partially inorganic. It responds amazingly to wireless technology, like a toaster oven or the cell phone. People go to the doctor, and the sores are on their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And the little wire guys, there's black and red and white, I believe they are. They're like waving around in the electromagnetic doctor's office. And he wants to send them down the hall to the psychiatric ward with a delusional parasitosis a verdict on their condition without even taking a sample from the sores to run it under a microscope and see what's going on. And to me, that indicates that, first of all, the delusional parasitosis was made up and put into the DSM-5 that psychiatrists follow. All of it's kind of contrived, I assume, by the AMA in bed with Big Pharma in order to really keep this under wraps, this particular disease, while they're hacking into doctor records and various social media. Everybody is talking about Morgellons on Facebook. So they're like collecting data in a covert, surreptitious manner, because this is really a plague. And here's the thing I think of, George, is that we all have it. That's what I realized with Clifford, because I saw in my own blood workup under his 300 power microscope, I saw the Morgellons sucking the iron out of my red blood cells. And I'm very healthy, and my red blood cells were, for the most part, perfectly round. But as soon as they start sucking the iron out, the blood cells all turn weird shapes. And so that's when I realized, my God, this is planetary, because we're all breathing this same air that's loaded with nanoparticles, nanoscale biologicals, nanoscale sensors, nanoscale microprocessors, and those, and what you were seeing, the polymers that you were seeing, like spider webs, it's all falling down on us. And because it's nanoscale, we're breathing it in, and it's going in our lungs, and then it's in our bloodstream. And then being nano, it can easily bypass the blood-brain barrier. So the rise in Alzheimer's, the rise in autism, the rise in autoimmune disease, hey, you know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out there's a connection between what's falling on us and we're having to breathe. We have not agreed to that. We have not agreed to our military-industrial intelligence complex to be guinea pigs. And yet we are being used as guinea pigs one more time. I mean, think of, historically, all the biological warfare experimentation that has been done on pockets of American citizens.
Oh, yeah.
The
yeah.
thing is, this is planetary. This is a whole other ballgame.
What is their end game, Ilana? What do they want?
I think it's transhumanism. On this scale, where they're loading us up with nanoparticles of heavy metals, that's conductivity. They want us to become even more conductive for being plugged into the space fence apparatus. But as far as the Morgellons, and I would include Lyme in that, they have a lot in common, and may actually even be the same thing. But they want to break down our immune system. So they send in something that our immune system simply cannot recognize, because it was built on thousands and thousands of years of protection of the human body. But the Morgellons, being all three kingdoms of nature, it can't recognize it. It can't deal with it. It sort of just doesn't even see it. So this has to do with breaking down the immune system. Next, the DNA, breaking down the DNA with the millimeter waves that are going to come with the 5G and have already come with TSA, where they, you know, you have to go through those terrible machines. And I can't go through them, because I'll immediately become faint.
Really? Through the X-ray machines?
Yes, I can't. I was surprised myself. I usually bypass it and get a pat down, but I had to. I ended up in that line, and so I thought, well, let's just see what happens. And it really took my breath away. I was very surprised.
Now, there are two kinds of machines. One, you just walk right through it, and the other is you have to stand, hold your arms up, and a tube goes right around you.
It's that second one really got me. Usually I use the first one. But anyway, they're heading toward transhumanism, breaking down the human immune system, getting us to a point where we are now we can now be manipulated remotely to make us into automatons. I mean, even our cell phones that we're carrying around, I don't own one myself, I refuse to, but the cell phone can be pulsed with frequencies to make us emotional, to deplete us of emotion and make us sort of automaton. This is the future, this cyborg kind of enhanced human being, and I think that is one of the objectives of them loading up the stratosphere with even fungi. A lot of the fungi coming down that people are suffering from is from the upper atmosphere. It's not even ours.
There are a lot of respiratory situations these days.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the chem flu, as they call it. Because it'll those nanoparticles, and that's something that really it would be great to concentrate on your show, is to really look at nanotechnology. And, I mean, it just skimmed through Congress. And, oh, they thought it was the greatest thing since sliced bread. But really, this may be our undoing. This may be the very core of our undoing is the nanotechnology. Because, for example, you breathe it in, and it goes straight into the alveoli, those little capillary thin bits in our lungs, mm-hmm. and jams them up. And that's why children and adults have these long, drawn-out coughs for months in the winter time. And this is what I've turned to. I mean, I started out with chemtrails and HARP, and now I'm seeing that this is heading toward the breakdown of humanity and the building of a, I can only call it a subhuman. They call it enhanced. It's certainly not something I desire. And to do that, the medical industry and the big pharma are making a pile of money off of our illnesses. While we're getting there.
What are they doing about their own families? I mean, are they putting little masks on them to breathe? What's happening?
Well, they must have the antidote. And knowing the wealthy as I do, I studied them for 10 years to understand how their way of living is quite different from ours. They have the antidote just as they did when AIDS was created. And their children can maybe a vaccination, maybe some pills. They're building underground, big mansions underground that will have state-of-the-art water and air filters. I tend to think that because this is so dramatic and may be used also for population decrease while enriching various industries, that they are really searching for a way to keep the atmosphere ionized without all the nanoparticles of heavy metals. Maybe they're hoping that the next generation will be able to, you know, we're very versatile, human beings are. We're very flexible. We can adjust to things amazingly. But maybe they're hoping for other generations that will be able to live in an ionized atmosphere filled with heavy metals? Maybe not. Maybe that's why they're working on so many plasma experiments in the sky. When people see all those curly cues up there and various things that they immediately think might be Planet X, Nibiru, or aliens, UFOs, a lot of that is plasma experimentation because our atmosphere is basically plasma ready all the time. All it needs is to be zapped with some radio frequency or microwaves, and things can, experiments can be run. I'm hoping that this is true because I don't see that they can do without the ionized atmosphere. And they've got to find another way to do it because people are dropping like flies.
Yeah, they sure are. They sure are. It's amazing. And of course, when you put all this together, and we talked about the end game, this is it in experimental mode, or is it ready to go?
Well, I watched when Trump entered office, and immediately after he entered office, they trotted out their favorite geoengineer, David Keith, who then admitted that they were now going to start geoengineering. Well, the truth is they've been geoengineering for two decades. It's been experimental, yes. They've been learning how to wield the weather. They've been learning how to, you know, how to make those hurricanes, how to steer them, how to make those tornadoes, floods, droughts, etc. But the announcement of David Keith that they were now ready to use geoengineering said to me that the experimentation is virtually over, and now it's all weather is now engineered, and everyone is put on political warning, because I see it all the time. I mean, the fires in California, come on. These are not natural fires. Yes, there's a lot of aluminum particulates in the soil that make this a tinderbox. And everybody's commenting on it here in the Pacific Northwest, where it's pretty cool in the summers. But on some days when the sun is shining, it's unreasonably hot. It's like burn your skin hot right away, not after 20 minutes in the sun, try five. And that is from the aluminum particulates that are so tiny in our atmosphere. The only time you can see any of this stuff, and I recommend to everyone, go out with a good flashlight on a dark night and just get a beam going and watch what's in that beam. And you will see.
It scares the living daylights out of you.
Well, it does. It does. And our government has lied to us and has not given us forewarning that this is going on because two very big industries, maybe more, are making a pile of money off of people being ill. And everybody I meet has some health thing. I don't, but I've been a health nut since the 60s. And I don't do doctors.
All right, Yolanda, stay with us. We'll talk more about this, and we'll take phone calls, too, next on Coast to Coast AM.